Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Now, evidently, no one has heard me. I had a little malfunction here. So I think this is better. I hope you're hearing me. All right, so we're going to start all over again. This, and hopefully we've got this fixed. This is Dr. Michelle, and you are listening to Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. And I just gave you this beautiful dissertation on what Ember Days are all about. But 573-4BREAD-4. You can write, text, call, and you can write me by DM live at breadboxmedia.com. And I want to talk to you today more about what it is to live deliberately. Let's take it out of the buzzwords of the day if we can and get down to some real brass tacks today on what does that mean, what does it look like, and how can you do it. I also want to talk about Ember Days, which has to do with fasting. We talked last week about eating disorders and that people who with them are exempt from fasting because it does focus on food. And that focus on food, any way you shake it, whether it's in restricting calories or just to think about it again, it can be triggering to those people. So, but I do want to mention it because it is happening in the church. Not everybody went from a requirement to your discretion, which of course, if anything's left to my discretion, such as fasting, I just ignored it when it came about in the 60s. I'm sure I was too young then, but still, it's something that we don't think a lot about. Some people observe it, some people don't. But what are Ember Days? And I want to bring this to your attention for a reason, because we're going to get behind the meaning of fasting and where it came from, why we do it on these four times, liturgically four times a year, and how to bring that into this idea of deliberate living. And they also given us all an alternative, because there is the fasting part, the actual fasting of food, but there's the other part that we can do instead. So if you have that physical condition, diabetic, eating disorder, depression, have to take medications and must have food, can't have meat because you have you can't have meat when you fast anyway, but certain things you can't eat because of, let's say, kidney problems or whatever, this, you know, we just don't do that. We don't go there. It's okay. There's other things as well. There's gluttony of the mind, gluttony of the soul. There's all kinds of things. We're going to be having to take all this up on the other side of the break. But I'm going to tell you what Ember Days are, why they're important to you and for you, whether you observe them or not, because they were taken from being a requirement to just being at the church's or the priest or the person's discretion. So we'll get to all that on the other side of the break. I also want to give you a little bit about how to assess yourself. You think you do it, but the question is, do we really? And isn't that life, for heaven's sakes? All right, so I am going to tell Lennon, you must edit away here, because we have no idea what's getting on and what's not getting on the air today. So let's make the best of what we got. And that's what this is supposed to be about anyway, making the best of what we have and doing a little bit of the deeper walk into Lent. We read some yesterday. I'll probably read more today because I haven't finished the article on Beyond Chocolate, which talked about listening to God. What is he asking of you? And not focusing so much on what can I give up and just showing yourself and God, I have willpower. I can give something up or I can exercise. It's like, you know, clap your hands and that's great, but perhaps there's something deeper. And that's what I want to get to, because this is our walk. This is our journey. Let we go deeper. We go deeper. We're like that little incredible voyage of science fiction. They had a movie in the 70s or something, that little tiny capsule that somebody ate. And they ended up being a little submarine that went around the body, the human body, and saw these wonders. And that's what we're going to do, but we're going to do it with the soul. So we started talking about Ember Days. So what does it mean? It comes from the Roman, and it is indeed one of the only certain observances that came directly from a Roman pagan activity, let's say. We have all these other things that were celebrated around the years that we've utilized different pagan festivities and changed them with the growing of Christianity so that we can utilize them. And there are rhymes and reasons to why festivities did occur throughout millennia. And a lot of that followed the seasons and followed the lack of food in a certain time or the abundance of food. People did rejoice or did pray during those times. So what this was, it actually means four seasons. There were two Roman words, and it was some kind of hybrid of these words that came out to be what we say is the word ember. And it had to do every quarter, every change of seasons, the pagans, the Romans of the time would worship the gods of that season and would sacrifice things to them. And there's other parts of it that we have incorporated into our religious walk. So we'll get to that on the other side of the break. This is Dr. Michelle.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.
Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You are listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. And I would like to thank Breadbox Media and our producer, Lennon, and our other overseer producer, Alex, because we are having all kinds of issues this morning. So thank you all out. Thank you all who are walking with me. Just look at it like I'm just stumbling over rocks here and you're just kind of hanging out and waiting for me to catch up. All right, so let's recap as best we can because I have no idea what went on air, what went off air. So we're going back to, I'm going to say it one more time, Ember Days. Ember Days. Something doesn't want me to get that out there. Ember Days. And it doesn't seem that big of a deal, but maybe it is because it really does fit in with where we've been going on this walk with the whole concept of different ways to fast and deliberate living. So Ember Days started off totally pagan, totally Roman, had to do with following the seasons and sacrificing and also praising the gods of that particular season, having mostly to do with the agricultural world of the time, so that everything was down in the earth. So when you had your growing season and it was good, rejoice and praise and sacrifice to make things better next time. And then when you had the barren time, where everything is just non-workable, non-usable, and you get through those times, and you mark that with a fasting, and then as spring comes, and you do what you need to do, and there's new life around you, you fast for that, because it's about getting yourself retuned to nature. And realizing that there is something grander than you, that you cannot guarantee, that you wake up and that harvest that you planted and looks so good won't be down to the ground tomorrow by a swarm of locusts you didn't know existed because you had never experienced them before, or some strange virus or whatever. We're used to this in our world, kind of, but we're very remote from it too. They were very in tuned with it. We are not in tuned with our nature. And much of what I talked about is saying, hey, maybe you should think about how far you've gotten from your own natural instincts of who you are. I think that is one, this is an aside, we're not going into it, but I think that is one of the most beautiful parts of natural family planning, is that you're in tune with your nature. The man is in tune with his nature, the woman's in tune with her nature. And you go through the cycles of your nature. The same with smells, as we talked about yesterday. Y'all might think it's crazy, but I'm telling you, the fact that our olfactory senses are knocked out, twisted, perverted, co-opted. You open your door and you smell someone from two blocks away, you smell their dryer sheet. And you can say, oh, that smells nice. Well, maybe it does smell nice, but what aren't you smelling? And what is it doing? And what is that? Every smell is molecules. There is not a smell that you can smell that isn't something. Like it or not, good or bad, it's a thing. It's an actual molecule. And it goes into your nose. I mean, really, the particles and you smell dust, you can smell, the fire burning, you can smell the garlic, you can smell whatever you smell. It's because molecules of that powerful, powerful, powerful molecules are escaping into the air. And they lodge in your nose. And you go, oh, I better do something with that. And just like you have a bunch of little, like little Oompa Doompa men, little elves or little Star Wars characters, you know, there they are and they're mining them and say, oh, we'll take a little here, a little there, here we'll do this, here we'll do that. They actually have all kinds of purposes. And they in themselves can be toxic or can be healing. You can take a smell and vomit, can't you? Something can be so wretched and so putrid. Why? Why isn't it great? Dogs might like it, but it can be so disgusting for you that you vomit. Something else can be so amazing for you that you're brought back to a time of as if you're sitting right there in a beloved parent's lap. Powerful stuff. And yet we give that all away. We give it away, and we don't even know it. You're giving it away. And pretty soon you're dependent on someone to create something in a lab for you. Your dirt, your water. There are science fiction or horror movies about people that control the water or that contaminate the water. We have companies right now, and I don't want to sound like an alarmist, but we do. We have companies right now that control the seeds of the earth. and they find ways to destroy self-germinating seeds, non-altered seeds. If you're old enough and you remember being a kid and having your mom buy potatoes, and within a very short time, they were plants. There was stuff growing out of them. If you also remember a time when seeds, you could take little seeds from your food and sprout them. Well, you can't do that so easy anymore. You can with some still, but there's a reason for that. They make it so you can't. They're altered. I'm not even going to say genetically altered, but they're altered. It's not hard to do. They do that. Again, what happens little by little? Little by little, you lose the desire for the subtle smell of an apple because you can't smell it because you've got something 1,000 times more powerful sticking to your mucous membranes. I'm telling you this for a reason, because I want to alert you this Lent. Why do we have Ember Days? Why did they? Do you know that part of the reason they did back in before Christ was not only to understand that there was something bigger than them that controlled the seasons, that caused good seasons and bad seasons. They also found that if they subjugated themselves for a small time by fasting, it made them appreciate nature even that much more. It got them more into their natural state. You aren't in your natural state. I'm not in my natural state. I can go down to the wire with electric lights burning to where I'm just so pained from sitting so long and writing and using my writing for my show or whatever. And I can get so hungry that all I got to do is go to the pharmaceutically created little ibuprofen, take one of those, run out to McDonald's, have them give me something that resembles some kind of thing that my body gets tricked into thinking it's food, and which it is created. Those things are created in labs. I mean, just really, it all looks like conspiracy, but it really is. It's crazy when you really look at the science of it all. And we have to love. I am not against science and progress. I wanted to just get on the air yesterday, last night, when I was listening to a very short, I was driving, a little thing on the news, about this guy who's was paralyzed, I think, from the neck down or maybe the waist down, since he was in a car accident, and he hadn't walked in many, many years. And science has created a model in which he could walk. And they did it in the most unique and amazing way. So he took 12 steps, all from some kind of a neurostimulation where he had to actually spend a few hours thinking about walking. Now, I don't know anything else about the story, but just that piece of knowledge that was important. Not that they came and they did some Frankenstein thing in him. In order for it to work, he had to think for hours before they began their part of it about walking, about himself walking, doing things, everyday things. Does that even tip you off to how ridiculously awe-inspiring, humbling the brain is? That really, when we think about that in the words of Jesus almost, you think of it, and when he says, you have so much more in you than you ever know. You can do what I do. Peter, you can walk on water. And we go, no. Our brains tell us no. Let's go back before the break. Let's go back and think about that being paralyzed person who's friends. And our friends can be anybody. Our friends take us down on that mat and find a way to get through the roof and get us down to where Jesus is, where he goes, your sins are forgiven. And they go, well, no, 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 no. I don't want to. I mean, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool. But what else? And he goes, well, you guys, you need to see something. So do you think it's easier? What's easier, to say get up and walk, or Your sins are forgiven. And he goes, well, here, let me just show you as well. Get up and walk. And the guy does. We have powerful stuff that we have, but we don't know how to use it. So this whole idea of what the Romans had done to get back a little bit to their nature is what we need to do as well. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle, 573-4BREAD-4. We got off to our little rocky start, but that's okay, stumbling over rocks. When I walk with my dog, Mozart, and we go up these paths, and they're really hard, some of them, because they're kind of steep, and I'm not Miss Rock Climber. There are times where he goes ahead of me, and he just stands there for a minute, and he'll stand, wait, and then he'll just turn around, look at me like, are you coming? But many times I'm stumbling over those rocks because it's very loose. All the rocks are very loose where we go. So that's what we were doing this morning, and that's what I seem to do every day. That's what we all do every day. We stumble over those rocks, and God is patiently waiting for us, looking back like the shepherd, because he is a shepherd, but it's like the German shepherd. He's looking back and just standing there for a minute, you know, just there, knowing that you're there behind him. And then he just turns gently and looks. Okay, yeah. Just enough to where when he knows you're still struggling, but he still walks ahead. And that's what we have to do. So we're talking about Ember Days and why that's important. Well, I love that because the church took it and made that 4 times a year, 3 days of, I think it's 3 days of fasting, and usually on a Wednesday and I think a Friday and a Saturday, I think it is. I'm not positive on that part. And the first week or after, the first Wednesday after the beginning of Lent, after the first Sunday of Lent, is one of those days. So we're not there exactly, but it's something that has not necessarily required. I really didn't even know it existed until it was brought to my attention, and the more that I pondered, the more I saw the beauty in it. It is about sacrifice. It is about the acceptance, acknowledgement, and homage to something greater than you. When we look at Romans 13, which of course someone brought that to my attention too, which I thought it was great, which I think is great. Here we go. It says, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resists the power, resists the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. Well, that's the little antiquated form of it. So we'll read it in another translation. Let every soul be subject to the sovereign authorities, for there is no power which is not from God. And those who are in authority are ordained by God. Whoever therefore resists authority resists the command of God, and they who resist shall receive judgment to themselves. For judges are not a menace to good works, but to evil. So, this is a way that they're likening in chapter 13 of Romans to good authority, human authority, but they're also talking about, in this other translation, to be subject, every soul be subject to the higher powers. Every soul be subject to God. And this is reverts back to this, the Ember Days, which I always, every time I heard it, thought it was about dying embers, because that makes sense, going to ash, coming back. But no, it isn't. So when we're looking at the idea of fasting, when we're looking at the idea of beyond chocolate, as we've been talking about the last few days, what is it that you are doing? What is it that you're doing? First of all, who are you? You wake up and you kind of know who you are. You move about your day. You've made certain definitions of yourself. You've got certain structures of yourself. But who are you really? And we can recite, well, I'm a child of God. Who made you? God made you. And that you got a little God in you and you house the Holy Spirit. But what does that really mean? Well, we spend our whole lifetime opening up to what it does mean, because we can't really know it. We didn't create it. It was created, and we are part of it, and we weren't part of it. All we know is that we do house it. We're told, this is my creation, you're my creation, and this is where we're going to go here. So coming back down to our things like dryer sheets and food, and what do we give up? The early Romans and the people before them 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 and the people all over the globe before Christ came down to this earth, we're onto something. Something bigger than us. There are forces unseen. And we have faith that we go to sleep at night and we wake up in the morning, but no one has a guarantee. And we have faith that we till our field and we plant some seeds, and we have faith that they will grow up, but there's no guarantee, because we have either heard stories or have experienced ourselves or known people who have died, suffered from, or otherwise been completely changed up in their life because the crop didn't come in or it got moldy. What about St. Vitus Dance? They think St. Vitus Dance from way back, I think it's the Middle Ages, where that whole town started having seizures and were doing all kinds of movements. They think it was because ergot of wheat. They think it was a hallucinogenic fungus that was growing on the wheat. It's a theory. So much we don't understand. We are biological beings, and we are at once so amazingly awesome and so insignificant that we really are in need of getting back to the root. The root. And what does chapter 11 of Romans say? Chapter 11 of Romans says, now if there's, this is Romans 11 verse 12, now if their stumbling has resulted in riches to the world and their condemnation in riches to the Gentiles, how much more is their restoration? It is to you Gentiles that I speak, inasmuch as I am the apostle to the Gentiles, and perhaps magnify my ministry. But if I am able to make those who are my flesh zealous, I may thus have saved some of them. And if their rejection has resulted in reconciliation of the world, how much more will their restoration be? Indeed, it will be life from the dead. For if the first fruit is holy, the rest of the lump is also holy. And if the root is holy, so are the branches. And if some of the branches were cut off, and you who are a branch of the wild olive, and you are the who are a branch of the wild olive tree, have been grafted in their place, and you have become a partaker of the root and the fatness of the olive tree, do not boast over the branches. For if you boast, it is not you who sustains the root, but the root who sustains you. Perhaps you may say the branches were cut off that I might be grafted in their place. Well, they were cut off because of their unbelief, but you exist by faith. Be not high-minded, but reverence of God. For if God did not spare the natural branches, it may well be he will not spare you. Consider, therefore, the goodness and severity of God on those who fell, severity. but on you, goodness. If you continue in his goodness, otherwise you will also be cut off. Well, that's pretty harsh stuff there. But if you, who have been cut from the wild olive tree, which is natural to you, and grafted contrary to your nature to become a good olive tree, how much more fruitful would that be if they were grafted into their natural olive tree? I'm desirous, my brethren, that you should know this mystery, so that you may not be wise in your own conceits, for blindness of the heart has to some degree befallen Israel until the end of the Gentiles shall come. So, that, okay, do you see that? Do you see that, or am I just like completely off into the clouds here? To me, it just is so, it's humbling. And it's not that I get it or that I studied it. I just saw that just now, actually. But it works. It works right into everything we're talking about. We don't just have the, let's look at just nature. Nature. First of all, don't forget Job 12:7. Do not forget that. Always come back to that during this Lenten season. Let's talk about nature. Let's talk about how we see nature throughout our little religious walk, or our, I'm not demeaning it or minimizing it, our spiritual walk. Because really, I don't know a lot of this stuff. This is all new to me. But I take little bits that kind of keep falling out of the sky onto my head, like our fallen nature, our nature in the garden. Why were we part of the garden? We were part of the garden. We lived in harmony with the garden at one point. And what was the garden? The garden was every living thing. We didn't have toothbrushes, floss, or indoor plumbing. We lived in the garden. And our nature, we had a nature that was given to us. And it was a fallen, then it fell. So we had this fallen nature. And then we became confused and beaten up and all kinds of stuff. And we started hurting each other and not listening to Job 12:7, who hadn't been around yet. But it's a repeated theme. Our nature gets us in trouble, but our nature allows us to be resurrected, because it is the original nature implanted in us, the original olive tree, the holy olive tree, that if we kind of sprout it off somewhere else, we can be grafted back onto it. Not exactly in the same way that we were before. So we'll take this up on the other side of the break. This is Dr. Michelle. We will meet up on the other side of the break.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. We are walking this road together. All of us, every single one of us, little, big, fat, skinny, old, young, because we all face the same things over and over and over. We all face weakness. We all are challenged to strength. We all have a gazillion red flags flapping in our face, and we all beat them away. And those of us who've done it and lived to tell the story, we can help others, and we will help others who, just like us, don't understand how to listen. They kind of get it, but they don't get it. And we kind of get it, and we don't get it. And we really learn, we think, do we have to relearn the same things over and over? So one of the tips that comes to us throughout history, biblical or non-biblical, simplicity, truth. St. Thomas Aquinas Einstein, Oppenheimer, a bunch of other people I don't know about because I'm really not that learned, but I bet you that's a Google somewhere. What great, great people kind of thought things were kind of silly at the end of their lives and wished that they had just simplified. All those people. I think I told you one quote from Einstein that I read, which I don't have, but it was like, gee, I wish I would have listened more to the mystics when I was young or read more about the mystics. A lot of them come back to simplicity. I've gone all around this crazy board and I've helped out mankind and helped out this earth and this mysterious plan, but it's really simple. And it is. Only we just don't understand it yet. When I've seen people die, and I have seen many people die, strangers and loved ones, and they all die differently. And when I see them die, you see them, and if you're privileged enough to be around someone in the process before they go, and you watch things happen in them. And as my brother wrote in his journal, am I going to die soon? It appears I am gaining the wisdom of an old man. And he was like 32, and he did die soon. He wasn't supposed to die exactly when he died. So as far as he knew, he probably had another year. And it was only a couple, maybe, I don't even know, weeks or months after he wrote that. And I saw little 9-year-old boys gain the wisdom of an old man a couple of months or weeks before they died. We have all these things in us, but we can't get to them before our time. Why? Because of our nature, because that's the body we live in. That's the mechanism we go in. That tree, that piece of broccoli we talked about yesterday, will not be in your stomach when it's in the little seed packet. It's not there yet. You know it will be once you put it in the ground and you do your thing, hoping that nothing befall it, blow it away, come and eat it in the middle of the night or steal it or whatever. That's you. That's you. What are the things that have shot you in the foot in your life? What are they? Passivity, weakness, looking for someone to give you instructions on how to be you, needing strength that isn't there, but loving the people that failed at that, and feeling guilty that you love, not that you love them, but feeling guilty because you really needed them to be stronger. You don't really understand it. They weren't. So it's like, but I love them. And you want to pattern yourself after someone who isn't strong. Or someone in your life that you trusted hurt you. Kind of like molded you. You just said, here, I'm a little piece of clay, mold me. And not really knowing you were doing that. Letting little by little to where you're a different form of yourself. And no one else around you can really understand it or see it. These are all things that we're dealing with. And Lent, death and resurrection, humiliation, maybe just to yourself. When you think about those humiliating moments where you were so vulnerable and you feel so stupid, which is not, I wouldn't want you to feel that. I understand that because that's what we do. How could I be so stupid? Well, you're not stupid, but you feel that way because you feel like you should have had some big old radar. You should have had some huge giant thing in front of you with big sword that you could just slay all the dragons. The hidden dragons, the dragons that looked real cute and funny, really seduced you into life. Girls or boys, I don't care. So whatever it is, or that great, that new car that you just knew was going to do the trick for your family, or, and you find yourself in debt and you lose your job, just all kinds of things that come up. So this is the time to reset the button. Let's say, all right, I am that little branch, that little olive branch we talked about in Romans, or God talked about in Romans, that we are that little olive branch, and we need to be grafted back onto the holy root. And how about if we take the word holy and say, yes, that's number one, as it said in Romans 13, every soul be subject, every soul, be subject to the fact there is higher power. And if you don't quite get it, and I don't quite get it, because I don't, every day I just sit before the program, gee, is this all this stuff really real? Or is just this stuff we say? I mean, really, I go through this all the time. But I do believe in my heart. I do. But am I confident all the time in it? No, absolutely no. But I still grasp on to Job 12:7, not just because I happen to look at the hummingbird, but because I have to remember that is just so plain as day. The earth is telling me I every day take for granted things I cannot see, every single day, with particles I cannot see, smells I cannot see. How do I know that down the road they're doing construction and I better be careful because I smell tar? Where is the tar? I don't know. I don't see it. When I'm smelling it stronger and stronger, where is it? It's in my nose. Tar particles, as I said, but I don't see it, but I know it's there. And I would be foolish to say, well, it's not, you know, I'm not stuck in it, so I'll just pretend it doesn't exist. It does exist. It does exist. So in your internal self, your internal engine, your internal fire, your internal fantasy world, your internal mystery, you need to open to that and allow God. I will read you before we go a friend of mine who is very, very, very much into reading the Bible herself. And she's been great because she's been that friend for me that lowers their little paralyzed friend down on a mat, because I've been a little paralyzed myself lately. But so I get this little text, and here's a little prayer that she wrote for herself. She said, Jesus, thank you. The word came alive to me this morning. I want my life to magnify you today. I know your will for my life is good, pleasing, and perfect. And God, in the grace you have given me, you have also given me gifts and certain things to do well. I have the gift of leadership, teaching, and encouraging. All of these things I will do to bring you honor, and I will do them gladly. Let my heart be open to anything else you are teaching me and showing me, Lord. I give you all of me because all you have done. I want you to find me acceptable, for this is my true act of worship. Father, transform my mind and continue to transform my thoughts. This is how I will know your will for my life. Today, I turn my life over to your care, God. Thank you that as for my family, children, brothers, and sisters, and myself, we are covered in prayer and grace today. Amen. Well, she's awesome. She's just on fire right now. She's reading, and this is what comes to her. That's beautiful. And it was really helpful because what hit me was this. The whole thing hit me. But it was also saying, you know, you've given me grace, but you've also given me gifts and certain things that I do well. So I need to do those things well. So you may not know what those are. You may be doing them right now, but you may just be discounting them. You may not understand how magnificent they are. What a beautiful mother you are. What a beautiful wife you are, or a beautiful wife you have, or a beautiful husband you have, or a beautiful soul that needs to be guarded, not stepped on. Too many people are putting up with stuff they should not put up with, and they are harming everyone around them as well as themselves. So we have to find the balance. How do we do that? Get back to simplicity. Start today. Deliberate living. One item, one thing that you, need to look at, smell, feel, and touch in utter simplicity and silence. This is Dr. Michelle. We'll see you tomorrow. Write me, please, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. We'll talk tomorrow. Until then, God bless.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.